Welcome in. Minor Talk is live along with Sal Montes, Zay Galindo. I'm Adrian Broaddus. We got the whole crew back in action, our River Oaks property, Schoolyard Sports Studios. We are presented by Jack in the Box, multiple locations in El Paso, open 365 because cravings don't have a curfew with Jack in the Box. Shout out to the whole team over here, our final show of Minor Talk in 2025. Next time you hear from us will be in 2026 on Friday when the Miners take on Missouri State. And guys, I mean, look, like the way that this one started, how could you expect the Miners to win, right? In this one, they were down as much as 35-15, looked bad. What's the realistic expectation? I keep seeing people say disappointed, let down, all that kind of stuff. What's different? I mean, really, this team has kind of shown they are who we thought they were since really November 11th when they took on Loyola Marymount and lost 71-58. Has there been progress? Maybe it's certain areas. They finally have figured out that they're more of a front court oriented team, and they desperately need one of their guards to step up in a positive way for them to have any shot, any chance here moving forward. And for the Miners, with this squad that they have, yes, it's always going to be a Joe Golding team where defense is the focus, defense is the priority. And I get that, right? That's a Joe Golding oriented squad right there. But their offense is just so far behind. Even if they keep it close in certain moments or certain games or whatever, certain stretches, I don't trust them to close out games the way that they did against North Dakota State at home. I mean, that one, they held on to a large lead and rallied back early. And I mean, like, they rallied back before the first half even ended, pretty much. And so that's what it'll take moving forward. UTEP having to build early leads and try to hold them and sustain them throughout the game. Against bigger teams, against teams with size, forget about it. Against teams who can hit three-pointers like La Tech did tonight, forget about it. That's just the end of the road there for the Miners, and that's how this season's going to probably roll when it's all said and done, or as it navigates throughout the rest of the season. Sal Montes, we'll start with you. Your instant reactions, La Tech defeats UTEP 75-63.
Yeah, I think this, on a quick fun note before I get into the real thoughts, I thought it was interesting. The most two tenured Conference USA members battled it out, and the two newest Conference USA members battled it out, Missouri State and Delaware. So just something off top I thought was interesting. But for the game itself, another slow start. And it's tough when you get behind that eight ball trying to get anything going for you, all while the other team's pretty much doing a heat check in the first 10 minutes. I mean, heat checks, we see those like after the 8-minute timeout or something when you kind of want to finish a half strong, so to speak. These guys are going out there shooting it lights out from the very beginning, so it was very hard to kind of catch up. They afforded the lead that they had any point in the game by that big scoring outburst in the first half, so it was kind of over from there.
Yeah, I felt like for the Miners in this one, there were a couple pivotal points. You could look at the early game and how they just kind of dug themselves into a hole. The big scoring drought they had early on, the 7 turnovers and 7-minute stretch early into this game. You could look at that. Or you could look at the L.A. Hayes, shot clock violation in the second half. If he hits that three-pointer, Miners cut it to 6 points. Instead, on the other side, La Tech hit back-to-back three-pointers to extend the game to a 14-point effort. Talk about a what if. I mean, if L.A. Hayes hit those back-to-back three-pointers in the second half, the Miners could have been within 10 points at that point. Instead, it was a 14-point game. Zay, I'll give you the floor. Your instant reactions, your instant thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, not much for me. I've known this. I think I knew they weren't going to be great before the Loyola Marymount game. They just... You know, when you look at the team, the way that it's built, you said it, they're a front court oriented team. But today, I mean, Jamal West struggled immensely. They tried to run the offense through him. He had a couple of early turnovers. It wasn't pretty. Elijah Jones got into foul trouble. And after that one, it really was over, right? They had that little run to cut the game to 10 before half. And I will say the effort during that run looked great, but you can't play with that much effort the whole game, right? Everybody wants to say, we need dogs, they need to go 110%. No, that's not how it works, right? You're not going to be able to put in 110% every minute of every game, and that's the only way UTEP wins games, because they have to grind you out, and they don't have that type of player.
Zay, you get a good pulse of the fan base. Where's the fan base currently at with this team? Because last Minor Talk, everybody, like, there was nobody who chimed in after UTEP's first victory. And I don't expect people to just call in and get back on the right, you know, back on board after UTEP has one single victory. I really didn't at the time. And then after this one right here, the Louisiana Tech win 75-63, sure, there's people chiming in on social media, but it's almost like we got to give everybody, like, an alarm. Like, hey, UTEP basketball is playing basketball tonight, by the way, everybody. Who's going to actually watch it? And I don't remember the last time I've seen fans just this out on a UTEP sport like basketball, which they hold so dearly to their hearts.
Yeah, I mean, I think the realistic answer and the honest truth one is I think they were out after the contract extension, right? You know, it was tough to justify that contract extension after such a disappointing year last year. And he didn't make, you know, Coach Golden didn't make the splash signing in, you know, the transfer portal or get someone out there to really rejuvenate this fan base. As a matter of fact, I mean, they lost Corey Camper. They lost David Terrell. They lost the guys that, you know, you had some faith in. So realistically, this fan base has been out since that contract extension. And you said it earlier, we knew what this team was after the Loyola Marymount game.
Sal, how would you answer that question? The pulse of the fan base, which just seems so down as of right now.
Yeah, and it's been that way for a large part. I think even going back to the game against St. Thomas, you know, of San Antonio or wherever it's
at. Yeah, wherever.
Or Austin or something. So it was kind of down since then. I mean, even the traction that's been coming through the phones, on social media, like, you're going to get your diehards, right? They're definitely going to voice their opinion, but you got to hit that filter bar, that search bar really hard and refine it a bit to see some more talk about UTEP, because it's just not a lot of buzz. I get it's a Monday night and, you know, it's very rare, but all in all, if this team was, let's say, I don't know, if they had 9 or 10 wins or something at this point, maybe there'd be a little bit more attention being paid to it. But they have a big hill to climb to garnish, you know, some type of attention from people that have been following them.
Well, think about it this way, man. We've seen it where, I mean, we're on this show very late, mm-hmm. Very early in the afternoon or whatever, and if UTEP's winning, there's buzz around basketball. This is a basketball town. I'll still maintain that. Despite the program starving for wins on the football side of things, this is still a basketball city here in the 915. I mean, it's a program right here that hangs their hat and all their success on what they've done in the past in basketball, and I think a lot of that is, you know, maybe a little bit you hold too much on history, and you got to be a little bit more forward thinking if you're UTEP moving forward. But at the same time, I feel like there's positives that you could take away from the history, and there's still things that you could draw from that. I just don't know if that can be any relevance here moving forward, or if we're just grasping for straws, grasping for anything as of success. I mean, to be honest with you, man, if we're going to be talking about losses left and right here on Minor Talk, I just play the last show, play the last episode. It's not going to be any different than we've had before. So I just want to see, I don't know. I mean, I want to see what, you know, UTEP fans can think differently as far as how they see things turning around, or if they see things turning around, because I just don't know what that's going to look like here moving forward. I don't know if they can find that, Zay, if the fan base can find some kind of happiness, some kind of solace in all the losing that they've had as of late.
And, you know, that's a great question, because, look, let's say you said it right. Let's say UTEP wins 10 to 12 games, right? Joe Golden just got an extension, so you don't know, like, if he has a losing season, which, you know, UTEP's on the way towards doing, right? I'm not trying to be mean. I'm being blunt. The way that this season is going, UTEP would be lucky to get maybe 13 wins. And there's a chance that Joe Golden is back after this year, and fans know that. Everybody knows that, and I think they're just out. They're done. They're done watching the same product on the floor, hearing the same, you know, I'll the same words post game, the excuses. It's boring. It's boring basketball. And it's not, you know, if you're not a real diehard, it's not interesting anymore.
Sal, if I was to be a Joe Golding apologist to you, okay, and to defend Joe Golding, if I was to say to you, the way that NIL is structured and the deficiencies that UTEP has in the NIL landscape compared to other schools, like even look at Norfolk State and look at what and North Dakota State and look at UC Irvine and what they're able to do with NIL resources on their side. I shouldn't say Norfolk State as an example, but UC Irvine and, of course, North Dakota State. Let's talk about those two teams right there and what they're able to do with their NIL resources right there. So what I'm trying to get at is if UTEP is already coming into college basketball at a disadvantage, and Joe Golding's back for another year, but his NIL really hasn't grown year over year. Is this on Golding for not building a roster without the resources? Or is this on UTEP for not raising enough NIL resources to help Golding out? Like, where does it start?
I think it can be a mixture of both. I mean, you can kind of weigh it out, 65-35, however you want to do it. As far as it being on Golding, I think the constant that's been around since he's been coaching at UTEP, and even going back to a little bit at ACU, was just the lack of offensive production, the lack of offensive fluidity, just being able to rely on your offense to carry you through a game and not just your defense, right? You haven't seen that much under Golding, barring, you know, some extremely phenomenal talents that we've seen throughout the past couple of years. But as far as it being on UTEP, that can be done as well. You know, there should be more resources for a school that has a movie made about this school. You know, you can find it on Disney Plus, wherever you want to stream your stuff. So it's a little bit of a mixture of both, man. I can't really go, you know, too big on one side. And then on top of that, too, I think not winning the big games when it matters the most, when you get there, butts in the seats. I mean, that's definitely hitting hard, too. So it's just a combo.
What about, okay, let me ask you this. So if I'm to be a more of a Joe Golding apologist, and Zay, you could also answer this one, but I'll quickly throw it to Sal. If I was to be a Joe Golding apologist and say, or like a backer, and say, like, hey, I'm still in on Golding, I'm still not out on this team. Look, this team obviously doesn't have the chemistry as it is right now. The coaching staff is coaching their ass off to try to figure things out with what works with this squad that might not be cohesive at this point right here, but all that really matters is January and February, which leads to March, and if this team can get hot in the conference tournament, they only take one team out of Conference USA anyways, so how can this team just try to maintain a competitive, or like, can this team contain a competitive nature around them in February, March, to make a crazy run late in the season?
Oh, man, that's, I don't know. And I say this because we've seen it before when there were players of, you know, more prestigious recruiting profiles, so to speak, right? More sought after, whatever the case is. So it's hard to say that. And I guess, yeah, let's talk in at the end of February, but we're at the end of December and they look just like they did at the beginning of November. So if there hasn't been progress from there to there, is there really much to look forward to when it comes to March in the first place?
915-505-60. 009-600 ESPN El Paso Twitter next. Zay, how would you answer that right there?
I want to answer the first one.
The NIL one.
Yeah. NIL one. Look, I mean, it's not like UTEP was good under Joe Golding before NIL. Like, they had a 20-win season, then a 14-win season, a sub-500 14-win season. I mean, they lost big games at home. Nobody wants to donate their $9.15 to a losing program, or even more, right? Nobody wants to give their money when, you know, this is the showing. When UTEP loses at home by 40 points to a rival in front of, you know, so you can go on and on, right? They don't win big games. They haven't been successful pre-NIL. Why would you send money now, right? Why would you do that? And look, this team, you could say they can get hot in March, but I don't see that happening. I don't see that happen. They don't have shooters. That's how you win in March. You know, Jack Golke with Oakland, right? You can go on and on. These teams get hot. There's some random off the bench that just drains three-pointers after three. They don't have that guy. Trey Horton, you're going to tell me Trey Horton's going to get hot in March? That's not going to be enough to lead into a conference championship.
I think they continue to bank on this developmental idea. Like, they could develop these guys year over year. And I think there's a balance you can have. I think there truly is. You can have high school guys that you grow within the process and develop within the process. And then you also can have guys that you grab out of the transfer portal who are just plug and play right away. Go get yourself a guy. Go get yourself a difference maker in the portal and move the needle in a significant way. Guys, I'm going crazy back here because Rams, who are down 21-0 and who desperately need this victory. Yes, Sal. Yes.
Wow. Let's go. My Rams.
Your Rams. My Rams. Falcons drove it all the way inside the 20. It was an easy chip shot field goal. By the way, they just made a 56-yard field goal. Jared Verse, one of my favorite players in the NFL, blocks the field goal, returns it back for a touchdown.
Wow.
24-17. Rams down by a touchdown in Atlanta. Let's bleeping go. Let's go back to the phones and talk Minor Talk. 915-505-6009. Happy holidays to Ronnie, who's joining us right now. Ronnie, forget the Miners, man. Live bet right now the Los Angeles Rams, because I love it right here. This is some good stuff for Monday Night Football.
Dude, I'm a huge Stafford fan because I'm obviously a Lions fan.
Right.
That guy just turns the ball over way too much. I mean, I think tonight he's tied with Brett Favre for the
most pick sixes in NFL history. He'll win that. He'll earn that crown. He'll win that crown when it's all said and done.
Definitely be a king of that hill for sure. Great player, though. I want to go back to what you said, and I don't disagree much with Sal, but I disagree. This is 1,000%. On Joe Golding, and here's why. Nowadays with the NCAA, there aren't even any rules, dude. Like, there's no such thing as cheating anymore because there are no rules. You can pay kids. You can take a kid out to G League. You can take a kid that was drafted and says eligibility. Like, there are no rules. It's the wild, wild west right now because the NCAA has zero leadership because the minute a kid like Pavi says, I'm going to sue your ass, they just crumble and cave, right? Like, kids got infinite amount of years, it seems like, right? Like, they got an infinity stone to just keep playing and playing and playing.
Yeah, Jamal Bienemy, where are you at? Christian Agnew, where are you at?
This is 1,000% on Joe Golden because there's no rules, man. Like, there are no rules. There are no, like, you can't tell me that you don't have enough money because here's another thing you could easily do. Now, you'd have to, you know, obviously move it around, wink, wink. But, dude, you get $750,000 a year. If you think you need another $50,000, take their own damn salary and donate it anonymously to the collective and let them have it and do what you got. There are no rules right now is what I'm saying. And so if you're not a coach who's willing to, like our guy at Baylor said today, you got to think outside the box because I'm tired of getting my head beat in and my administration wants another title. You got to think outside the box, dude. Until the NCAA tells you there's a hard written rule of you can't pay this kid or you can't use this kid's eligible. Like, until they tell you some hard written rules, just think outside the box and go get whatever. Hell, Bronny James got 3 years left, and he don't need money. So, I mean, just do what you got to do because there are no rules, right? I'm being serious. There are no rules. This is why it's 1,000% on Golding to get crafty. Like, I get that he moved his staff around and he went and got the great coach from South Plains. That's all well and good, but, hey, man, I'm being honest with you. JUCO kids don't move the needle anymore because once Portal came into effect, only other Division One or Division Two high caliber players move the needle. You need guys with 4 year playing experience, all conference type play. Those guys move the needle. So a JUCO kid doesn't really move the needle much. So you can add one or two here and there to get some depth, to get some insurance. But in terms of moving the needle and trying to finish from the middle of the pack to the top three of your conference or from the bottom to the middle, you're going to have 4 year proven guys. And there are no rules, man.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, Ronnie. So, Ronnie, if next year in the Mountain West they have, let's just hypothetically say UTEP has a million in NIL, I would spend $500 to $750 on a proven guy. Like, give me like the guy, and then just build around that. I honestly think instead of spreading it out and going maybe two or three or four 6-figure deals with all your NIL, and then spreading out everything else outside of that, go get yourself a true guy for like $500,000 or $750,000 to be your guy next year in the Mountain West. I think they really have to restructure their thoughts on this because you're right. They don't have a lot of needle movers on this current team the way it's built.
Well, here's my thing, Adrian. Money doesn't solve problems. It just enables problems. So if you're a crackhead and you get rich, you just smoke more crack. And I just don't think Joe Golding is a good recruiter, man. And I don't care how. This guy could have infinity. Chase Bank and say, hey, walk down here, clean us out, and take what you need to go get what you want. I just don't think he's a good recruiter. And that's just – some guys just aren't, you know. And so I don't know if money solves all of UTEP's problems. It maybe helps to – you know, you put mascara on a black eye and it looks like, okay, sure, you haven't taken a few punches. But at the end of the day, man, we still know why the eye is black and blue. And so I just think that you got a guy that really probably needs more salesmen on the staff that can go and do the recruiting, go and get it done, more relatable to kids. And then when kids get lonely or homesick or whatever happens between the time when Golding signs a kid, right, and then the kid actually has to live in El Paso, play for Joe Golding, there's a disconnect, right? Because you see this every year that Golding can't retain anybody that does anything, right? Like all the kids seem to just bolt out of there for different reasons. And so that's where you need true salesmen that are dealing with the players day in and day out, and Golding's really only talking to them at practice, at games. But other than that, you need the salesman who brought them here to how's mom, how's dad, how's grandma, how's the whatever's going on, you know, how you feel. Like they need to be he needs to be hands off, get out the way. And I'll tell you who coaches just like that. You ready? He's been a coach for a long time, a lot of different places. Steve Alford doesn't even talk to the players outside of practice. He doesn't know where they live at. He doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't know if their parents are alive, dead, what they ate. He has no desire to. He leaves that to all of his assistants and the guys who recruit the kids to be involved in the kids' day-to-day. He only talks to them at practice and at games. And if you're not in the top seven, he might not even talk to you until you crack the top seven. If that takes you a year or two, then he might not even know your first name. And that's just how he is. He's very disconnected because, remember, he came up under Bob Knight, who was the same way. And so, and I believe Golding to be closer to that mold than he is to a Dan Hurley mold, right, where he's kind of hands-on and very lively and very vivacious. Like, so he needs salesmen on his staff, right, that are going to deal with the kids day-to-day while he just kind of sits back, does the basketball thing, and when the offseason comes, once again, don't really talk much, just look at the charts to see who's in the gym, what the shooting percentages look like in the workouts. Once again, you're hands-off and you're letting your salesman go recruit the kids, but also retain the kids. I think that's the bigger issue here, more so than money, because I don't know if he had a mill, if he can land a guy that's a difference maker that he actually gets along with. I mean, who was the kid 2 years ago from Philly that absolutely almost quit on him because he just hated him? He hated.
Are you talking about Zid Powell?
Exactly. I mean, he just hated Golding. I mean, once we got to the middle of the season, it was clear that they didn't like each other. Right. It is what it is. And he was supposed to be the guy, right? And he just did not like Golding. Golding didn't like him. So I think that Golding really has to take a hands off approach, just get the hell out of the way and just coach the kids for 2 hours, whether that's game day or practice, and just let those kids be. Don't talk to them, don't text them, stay as disconnected as possible, keep the checks coming, and let the salesman who brought them here deal with their every freaking need. They need Wingstop and Uber Eats. Let the salesman deal with that.
I like that. You know, we need more bag boys with UTEP. You know, I'm not opposed to that idea there, Ronnie. I appreciate your phone call, man. Thank you for weighing in. You know, Walden actually does a good job because a lot of his supports, he has a million coaches on staff. I don't know how any of those guys make any money, but like he has a million people on his coaching staff, and I'm sure a lot of those guys are like relationship guys to just make sure that the locker room and the juice is still there, and like they can maintain a lot of those relationships. And a lot of what college athletics has turned to is relationships, and I don't feel like that's something that Joe Golding should have to administer on his side. At the same time, it's something that they have to figure out how to balance the relationship side with the you know, recruiting side. To say that the relationship soured with former players, I'll push back on that, and I'll just say that I really have never heard anybody speak ill with, like, all former players and stuff like that, even the ones that didn't necessarily end on the best terms. I have not heard anybody talk ill about Golding. Like, he's still a player's coach. Like, they really like him. But maybe, you know, like what Ronnie's saying, be a little bit more hands-off on the day-to-day stuff. Build your coaching staff with people who could be a little bit more hands-on with this kind of stuff. And they're just going to have to figure out different things and different ways to try to win in the Mountain West, because this past run, these past 5 years, has not really led to winning. So that's kind of how you can assess it that way. But good phone call. Appreciate you, Ronnie. Thank you for weighing in. We'll get to some comments here in just a moment. I want to give you guys five burning questions as well. And then let's wrap it up and we'll preview what's ahead here for UTEP. Stay with us. Minor Talk continues. We're presented by Jack in the Box. We'll take our first and only time out of the program. 915-505-6009 is our telephone number. If you want to weigh in, now's the time to do it. 600 ESPN El Paso. We'll talk a little and sprinkle in a little UTEP football news that happened as well. Minor Talk continues here on 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, Minor Talk is back. Along with Sal Montes, Zay Galindo, I'm Adrian Broaddus, represented by Jack in the Box. Our telephone number, 915-505-6009. Louisiana Tech defeats UTEP 75-63. I've got five burning questions. We'll talk some comments, and then we'll wrap this one up here on the program. If you want to weigh in, now is the time to do it, 915-505-6009. Either of you guys can answer these questions, okay? So we'll just kind of rip them off, and these are just observations I saw during the game. So I'll start with, for each one, I'll tee each one up, and then I'll end with a question, okay? Elijah Jones, I want to start off with him. He was 5 for 12 today, 11 points, 1 for 5 from beyond the arc, 7 rebounds. He fouled out. He had a block and a steal, 19 minutes. That's all he played. 19 minutes of action here tonight. By the way, I don't know if I said it on Minor Talk. Maybe you guys can clarify, and maybe I said this on the previous one in the consolation game, or I even maybe have said it on Sports Talk. Regardless, I said this at some point. There is a way to beat Elijah Jones, and the way to beat him is mental. It's just you get in his head and you force him into bad decisions that he makes in critical moments or off emotions. And tonight was a prime example of that. He gets the double technical that turns three fouls into four right away, and he hardly plays in the second half. That happened right away. He got two fouls right away in this game as well in the first half. And my burning question to you guys today is, with Elijah Jones, 11 points, 5 for 12, 7 rebounds, 19 minutes. Previous game, he scores his career best, 24 points in a win. Can UTEP win without Elijah Jones playing a good game?
No. I think they can't. I mean, you see it right there. He had a decent game today, but he was in foul trouble the whole game, and without him, they didn't have any juice. I think I've come to the conclusion he's the best scorer on this team, and at times I think he is the best player on this team, which is, you know, surprising. It's interesting. I didn't expect me saying that from the start of the year, but I got to give credit to him. He's developed. I mean, he came here as a transfer, so his expectations were a little bit different, but let's remember, his first year at ECU, he did not play at all. He left right. mid-year. He left mid-year, so he really came to UTEP as a redshirt freshman with no, you know, game time under his belt, and he's developed into a really, really good player. But, you know, can you be a plus 500 team in Conference USA with Elijah Jones as your best player? I don't think so. He's a great player. He would bode well with a point guard that can get him the ball and have to pick and roll off a team that can stretch the floor. He's doing it all by himself, and it's not fair to ask him for that.
Okay, so your answer is UTEP cannot win without a good Elijah Jones game, or without Elijah Jones, period. So I think that's a good answer. Here's my next question, okay? I'm gonna reel off some numbers for you. Here are the last four games for this individual, okay? Against Hawaii, 12 points, 4 of 13. Against Norfolk State, 17 points, 3 for 7 from two-point shots, 2 for 4 in made three-pointers. Against North Dakota State, 10 points, including 2 for 5 from two-point shots. And then against Louisiana Tech tonight, 16 points, including a trio of made three-pointers. My question to you, Zay, you just answered it, and I think you're going to have to say no based on your previous. Is Kasim Watson the best offensive player for UTEP?
No, but I want to say yes, but right, I said Elijah Jones is, and I'll stick by that. But I think Kasim Watson has a higher ceiling offensively than Elijah Jones. He just hasn't been as consistent, right? You know, I think that we see he's a 20-point he's a 20 points per game scorer. He did it at Delaware State. He's lengthy. He projects to be a good offensive guy, but he just has too many off games to say he's the best offensive player on this team. But if he can put games like this together in multiple, like on this road trip, if he can go over 12 points on, you know, over 45% from the field, then we're having a different conversation. But until then, until he shows some consistency at this level, he's not the best offensive player.
And just as I said that, Matthew Stafford threw a pick six. To Xavier Watts. So tough stuff over here. Actually, maybe that's a good thing, Sal. Give the Rams a ball back, and then they can try to flip it around quickly.
It was a touchdown pass. That's what I don't get.
He scored four touchdown passes today. Just the only problem is two have gone to the other team.
So. Ronnie was coming from the future.
He really was. Yeah, Ronnie with the off
the
top
past.
Row. Yeah, exactly. Future and the pass. And by the way, with this one, he stepped out of bounds. I was going to say he broke the record right here, Matthew Stafford, for career pick sixes right there. So, okay. Unsportsmanlike conduct against both teams. Right there, so yeah. Oh wow, they're gonna call it against. Let's stick. To
I don't even
talk.
Know what's going
yeah,
on.
I don't
That's
know what's
crazy.
Going on. Let's just stick to minor talk. I will say this though, Sal. When it comes to Kasim Watson, Zay says no, can't be the best offensive player. Can UTEP win without Elijah Jones? No. Okay, so those are two no's right there. For those two questions right there that I threw out there to start things off. Going back to Kasim Watson, if they figure out a way to get him more shot attempts, and if they figure out a way for him to hit from beyond the arc a little bit more consistently or at higher volume, is this the right move? Is this the right team right here? Or is this the guy who can actually lead them offensively moving forward? He doesn't have to be necessarily the best player offensively, but maybe he's their night-to-night leading scorer for them offensively. Who knows?
That's what you want to see because we just talked about getting help, right? Ease load for your teammates. And if you could do that by dropping 15 on a given night or just even play smart, you know, good passes, not turning the ball over, that's how you can contribute. I think, you know, as it stands right now, obviously the numbers are the numbers, but Elijah Jones is probably your biggest threat to score, you know, somewhere around that 15. He's hovering around there just under it or maybe after it after today's game, depending on the numbers. But he's in the area. That's my point. So if you want to ease the load, that helps out. But tonight, Elijah in foul trouble, and that really hampered them. Your best offensive option, while you're in a game that the other team is just seemingly shooting lights out, you know, throughout the first half and parts in the second half, you need all you can get. And when that threat is taken away, you got to see that that 10-point lead kind of, you know, explode into 15 at times and whatever it was.
Let's go to my next burning question. In six of UTEP's 12 games, this player has played in 3 minutes or less or a DNP, and that is L.A. Hayes, who tonight played in 12 minutes off the bench, scored 9 points, including a made three-pointer that UTEP desperately needed. Could have been 15 points in this game. It was a questionable shot clock violation that I'm still, that's a CUSA ref special right there. If they come back around and say, hey, by the way, this one was a made three-pointer, and they were like, correct the score to 75-66, I wouldn't be shocked because that L.A. Hayes, it looked like a made three-pointer right there. Did not look like a shot clock violation. My question to you, Zay, why doesn't L.A. Hayes play more?
I don't know. Like, I was thinking early in the game, like, why does he not play? Because in practice, when I've only seen a couple practices, but L.A. Hayes is usually looking pretty good. Like, in game, he hasn't done anything like...
He's like a pickup hooper.
Yeah.
Pickup like, basketball hooper.
Even in the beginning of the year, like, he didn't do anything on the court that would make me say, like, oh, like, don't ever play this guy again. Like, there's a couple players that did that play a lot.
Yes.
Wink. But L.A. Hayes was not one of them that I saw, and I was like, this guy just, he's not built for this. Like, he looks good. He plays the part. He looks the part. He's 6'4", on a good day. Like, he's an athletic guard, and he provides a spark. Him and Cassius Brooks, like, they need to play more. They need to play over K.J. Thomas and Trey Horton. You know, those pairs of guard, like, I'm sorry. I know that they want to stick with this developing them, this and the third, but They're better. L.A. Hayes and Cassius Brooks have looked better in their limited amount of time on the court than Trey Horton and K.J. Thomas.
Okay, to back that up, Sal, here, I'll give you the numbers, okay? K.J. Thomas tonight, 1 point, 0 for 5 from the floor, 0 for 4 from beyond the arc, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 turnover in 29 minutes. L.A. Hayes, 12 minutes, 9 points, including that made 3. Trey Horton, 10 minutes, 0 for 3 from beyond the arc. Now going back to the Westar Don Haskins Sun Bowl Invitational, he's 0 for 11 from three-point land here during these last three games. And then Cassius Brooks, to Zay's point, 20 minutes, 6 points. He had 2 assists, 2 turnovers, but 5 rebounds. This is an undersized guard who gets 5 rebounds in this game right here. Cassius Brooks with 20 minutes off the bench, L.A. Hayes with 12. That's 32 minutes for those two combined. Horton with 10 minutes. K.J. Thomas with 29. That's 39 minutes for those two combined. I'd like to see things flipped. Just the same thing. Like, you can play all four guys. Just flip those minutes right there and give them in favor of Cassius Brooks and L.A. Hayes, at least for the next stretch, just to see what you have.
And I think it's because the style of aggression that they have when they play, it kind of just fits that system. You like to see that aggression turn into fast break points, you know, turn into, stolen passes or disrupting, possessions when you're on defense. And then on offense, you get to see them slash. You get to see a little bit more creativity. So I do agree. And going into January, right, when game number 2 of Conference USA play, now you have a better idea of who does what well, who doesn't do what well. You kind of got to roll that way, so I'm with you on that one.
Okay, right? It kind of answers the question that I had next. If UTEP has to play smaller in some of these games, which is going to happen, like I saw people on social media already barking at the fact that UTEP's playing way too big. They have guys like Kasim Watson, Bai, and Jamal West on the floor at the same time together. That's pretty much threes, like combo forwards, like three threes playing on the floor at the same time, other than Bai, who's a true five, right? But you got a lot of size in these lineups. If UTEP has to play smaller, who would you rather have? Cassius Brooks, K.J. Thomas, Trey Horton, L.A. Hayes, or someone else in the backcourt alongside Caleb Blackwell? Like, how would you guys – we kind of just answered it right there, but how would you guys answer that question right there?
I like L.A. Hayes. Like, I really do like this guy. He looked good at the JUCO level. He looks good here. I mean, he plays off the ball well. He had a three. You know, he can shoot it a little bit. He can score on the ball, off the ball. I said, you know, we talked about it earlier, Cassius Brooks and L.A. Hayes. I'll take either one of those, but give me L.A. Hayes if I had to choose one.
Any thoughts there, Sal?
It's pretty much on par with it, and I'll say this, though. I know people are mentioning about playing more bigs than not, but go back at the end of last year and the year before that.
Sure.
They need to play bigger. They got to play bigger. They're getting out-rebounded, so maybe it's just something he's doing to try and ease that part. You know what I mean? You don't want it to be too bad, and in general, not just position-wise, they have played bigger and have rebounded better this year, or at least it looks like it, than years past. So I'm not totally off board with it. You want to be able to do something that's going to keep you in the game. But on the other side, right, like, hey, you got to be quicker out there too. So you got to give up something to get something. But as far as the lineup changes, now I'm kind of on brand with it. Definitely want to see some more Hayes and some more Brooks, just judging off of the previous performances.
Okay, I just want to give one more burning question, and we're starting to wrap up, minor talk here on the program. Trey Horton. Wow, guys. 6 of 30. His three-point percentage has now dropped to 20%. I don't even know what my question is. My question is, what will it take to get Trey Horton III out of this scoring and shooting slump? It's not just a shooting slump now. It's a scoring slump. Like, he makes the putback where he was wide open. Like, he got the rebound. Good for him, right? He's being a little bit aggressive. But he needs to do that more. Like, he's 6'5" and a bigger guy. Like, go out, get your rebounds. If you're not hitting the three-pointers, follow your shot. And then on the same time, like, have more confidence in these three-point looks. Like, it just seems like there's just no confidence from Trey Horton, who's now become a 20% three-point shooter. Like, what is it going to take to get him out of this?
And, like, the bad thing is he has no bag. Like, I don't want to be rude. I don't want to be mean. But you see Caleb Blackwell. He can dribble it up the court. He can move. He's a little shifty. He has some handles. He can create his own shot. I've never seen Trey Horton, you know, do anything other than maybe step into a mid-range shot, which it usually...
It's a catch and shoot.
Yeah, he's a catch and shoot guy. And right now, he can only do the first part of that. He can only catch it because when he shoots it, 80% of the time, he's missing it from three, and that's just that's not winning basketball. And you know what they say: you got to just keep shooting when you're in a slump. But man, like, did you say 6 of 30? Like, that's
6 of 30.
That's rough from three from the guy that you kind of lay your hat on. He's your 3-point shooter. If he's your 3-point shooter, I don't want to know. I don't want to know why he's your 3-point shooter. Like, if your best 3-point shooter is only shooting 20%, I don't want to know what the other guys are shooting on 30 attempts.
Right. I mean, I'm worried about him moving forward from beyond the arc, and I just don't know what the answer is. By the way, Sal, Caleb Blackwell, 40% from beyond the arc, 6 of 16 of 40. So he's been the guy attempting a lot of these 3-pointers. And then here's another guy who I would trust more from beyond the arc, who you might not think necessarily. Elijah Jones, 12 of 35 from beyond the arc, 34% 3-point shooter. Okay, I'm going to just go down the list. You tell me if you trust him more from beyond the arc than Trey Horton. Kasim Watson.
Oh, yeah.
Jamal West Jr. Probably no.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I
let's say no. Take that one. Caleb Blackwell.
Yes.
Elijah Jones.
Yes.
Even KJ Thomas.
And I think the big difference, too, is like Zay mentioned it right now. There's zero bag. All those guys we just reeled off, they can pump and drive.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So they already have that dual threat. So one of three things is going to happen. They're going to shoot it. They're going to pass it. Or they're going to attack the hoop. As far as it goes with Horton, more times than not, you're going to see a shot go up, and it's not going to look too good, at least from this year. So that's the big difference for me. It goes beyond just the 3-point shooting for me. But if I had to pick, even then and still, I'll choose those others.
Okay, let's go to Twitter and X, guys. Let's wrap it up with some thoughts from other people. This is Andrew at Andrew West Texas. Not sure I've ever seen the teams that are worse offensively than Joe Golding's squads from the past 4 years. Outside of the 2021-22 team, but those were Rodney Terry recruits. None of them can score points. Hashtag minor talk. This is, you guys can chime in whenever. You guys have hot mics, so chime in whenever. Pinky, much better than the start of the first game. I think he was talking about the West Star Don Haskins Sun Bowl Invitational. And then he also, Pinky chimes in on Trey Horton. Horton is lacking confidence shooting the three, but keep shooting, work your way out of the slump, hashtag minor talk. Augustine, it's clear that none of this is not on Golding. There's no effort, no huevos to these players, no pride, no guts, obviously no glory. Disgusting not to love what allegedly makes you happy. I think he's alluding to, basketball in this case, right there, as Puka Nacua scores a touchdown for the Rams to tie things up. Man, the Rams just battled through all of this adversity today. Poncho, well, Uncle Jim Center gave Coach Joe Golding an extension without a buyout clause, so firing him would be expensive. I think he needs to go, but where do we get the money to pay him for the rest of this contract? Hashtag minor talk. This is coming in from Pinky again. UTEP offense is pass, dribble, pass, shot clock. Gotta shoot, brick, no attack to the basket. Oh boy, have seen this many times before. Come on, Miners. Tristan Pence chiming in with a good one. Once again, UTEP is not ready to play and looks like a dysfunctional mess on offense. There's no more excuses. Golding is doing a horrible job with this team and, quite frankly, with UTEP men's basketball program. He needs to resign. Herman Flores, they should just forfeit the remainder of their schedule. Same outcome. Tex Truth Tejano, thought the Miners made progress in their last game, but against La Tech, they've gone backwards. Sorry, but we need new guards. KJ Thomas and Trey Horton cannot make anything. Golding, well, he just doesn't have it. This is from My Sons at Mix My Sons. Why does UTEP suck so bad? Tough, man. There you go. There's all your comments right there. The other comment that we do want to mention here on the program is one that we heard about earlier today. We heard that UTEP football is expected to hire Peyton Party as a tight ends coach. He's 29 years old, so he's my age. Sal, I could do it. I can maybe be a coach. one day. What do you think, Sal?
Do it. Why not? Let's go right now.
Let's do it.
Here we come.
He was recently an interim head coach for the San Antonio Brahmas, a 29-year-old, and he's coached with Texas A&M Commerce before in his past. So there you go, Zay, a new tight ends coach.
Yeah, and speaking of LinkedIn, like I was scrolling on LinkedIn, I think like last month, and like I kid you not, like recommended for you. And look, I might
Gavin
be like,
Hardison.
No, this is like recommended for you. And because on LinkedIn, I don't know what I put for. It was literally the UAB head football coaching job. Like they posted it on LinkedIn.
Nice.
I'm serious. I think I took a screenshot of it and I was like, you know, I'm going to pass on that.
That's where they're going to find Bill Clark to rehire him at UAB. Bill Clark, shout out to him. He's the guy. So, Let's go with this one right here. How about the fact that Pebble Hills grad Gael Ochoa is in the portal, formerly a UTEP commit. He joined the Rebels over at UNLV over the last two seasons, has never really broken through, hasn't had his opportunity to play. And they've had a lot of turnover in their quarterback room right there. But Gael Ochoa, who was previously recruited by Scotty Walden, by the way, there you go. There's an opportunity for UTEP to maybe try to grab somebody out of the portal. Albeit, though, I mean, he has zero experience.
He does. He has no experience, and like you said, they've had a lot of coaching staff turnover. He's played in front of some really, really good quarterbacks as well over there at UNLV. So, look, I'll say this. We both watched Shea and Gael in high school. Who do you think was better?
Gael.
I thought Gael was better.
Gael.
Yeah. You know, I think he was just more the complete player. I know Shea, the big thing with him, he can run, but Gael can run, man. Like, he's a lengthy 6'3", 6'4", guy, and he's speedy. He's quick. He'll run you over. So, you know, if this is the guy that UTEP decides to put all their, feathers, all their eggs into, look, I wouldn't mind it. I don't think I would mind it, but at the same time, you do need an experienced guy.
Yeah, and I'm cool with the thought of a player who could be a dual threat type of player like that. But I don't know if he fits the thing that UTEP needs, and that's a proven guy, a guy who's done it at the Division I level, and Gael just doesn't have that experience. Could he compete and be in the quarterback room? Yeah, I think that'd be a great opportunity for Ochoa right there. Another guy who's back in the portal, Kyren Duhon. And you know what? Both you guys called it. I think both you guys said it when he hit the portal originally. You were like, and Zay said it for sure. Like, he was the one who for sure called it. Like, I don't think he's going to have the same progress and success at Oklahoma State. And hardly got on the field, Sal. Kyren came on back in the portal.
You're having to click that refresh button at the beginning of the year. Like, wait, they're a game in. Why are there no numbers for this guy, considering all the success he had individually at UTEP? And the crazy part is they put sophomore or something like that with Duhon, enters the transfer portal, has a combined whatever, seven sacks through 2 years. And it's
seven
like
sacks
seven
at UTEP.
UTEP. What are you talking about? So I don't know, man. It'll be interesting to see who has interest, considering the year that he had at Oklahoma State. However, there's always eyes on these players. So somebody could say, hey, a couple years ago you were killing it with UTEP, you know, we just don't think you had the right scheme, blah 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 blah, with Oklahoma State, come on over here. So we'll see where he lands, but I do think that the potential is still there for him.
You know, another thing that I would have to kind of look at with all this right here, and guys like Kyren Duhon or guys who just don't really like UTEP and who go elsewhere, I mean, Zay, the other part to it is, yeah, we're over here laughing and say, oh, you know, he had no success, but he probably got the bag, like, and he's going to find another landing spot. So who's really losing right now? Like, he's not losing. Like, he's going to be just fine. He did exhaust a year of eligibility, which is a bit of a drawback. But still, I mean, you're talking about a guy in Duhon who's going to find his landing spot and is going to get another bag probably at his next landing spot.
Yeah, you know, he got the bag. And look, that's good right now. But I'll just say this. Long term, this isn't great for Kyren Duhon, right? You know, when you're at a place like UTEP, and I know it's hard to say this from an outsider's perspective, but he had seven sacks as a true freshman. Like, if he comes back just for one more year, he can, one, maybe land at a more attractive spot than he did Oklahoma State. Like, they were the worst Power 5 team in, you know, basically the whole country. They were one of the worst.
You
they
consider Oregon coat. State Power 5, Power 4?
No.
Yeah, okay, me neither. So fair enough.
And, you know, like, they were terrible. They lost a coach mid-year, and he still couldn't find his footing. Like, if you wait out, if you're somewhere where you have seven sacks as a true freshman, you got to wait that out, man. You got to wait it out. I'm not just saying that because I like seeing him in a UTEP uniform, but if you wait that out one more year, like Kyren Duhon could have ended up at Ole Miss, could have ended up at Indiana, somewhere like that, right? And it's just, it's hard. The transfer portal is the wild, wild west, and the grass isn't always greener.
It's not, and I was actually, speaking of the transfer portal, I've having a lot of Skylar Locklear conversations over the last couple days on what's his grade, like what he looks like in the portal, will teams look at him, what's going to happen to Malachi Nelson, all of that. And it's just, I mean, time will tell for all of it, and we'll see it all kind of unfold. And in January, once January turns the page and we're talking next week even, you're going to hear a lot of rumors about UTEP visits and players that UTEP is going after in the transfer portal as the window opens up. So a lot of news that will come with when it comes to UTEP football, and I'm excited for all of it, man. Let's go. Let's talk about it all. 915-505-6009. That's how. That's our telephone number. La Tech 75, UTEP 63. Guys, let's just do some final thoughts. Missouri State Friday. That's on deck. Then it's FIU Sunday. Those are all the games that are coming up here for the Miners on this three-game road stretch. I don't know if I have them winning on Sunday, but give me the Friday game. I think they could beat Missouri State. I think the bit of a hold-off right here, or a layoff, I should say, for basketball will help them. It'll benefit them during this time right here. So I'm going UTEP against Missouri State in that one, and I have them losing at FIU come Sunday. So that's what I'll say right there. Sal, I'll throw it your way. Your predictions and your final words here.
I'll give the loss to the Miners against Missouri State. I know that they didn't start the year too well, but they're on a three-game winning streak. I think that counts for something. And two of those games, right, Oral Roberts and Lindenwood, close games, they were able to squeak past their opponents in those ones. So obviously the win today against Delaware, almost by 20 points. I think it was like an 18-point win. Holding them to 43 points, if their defense has been in tune, not allowing 70 points pretty much since Xavier. Who doesn't allow 70 points to Xavier?
Right.
You know, that bodes well for you. So I think that's going to be some scoring droughts for the Miners. I don't see any wins in these upcoming three.
Okay, Zay, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I'll flip yours. I think that they're going to lose on Friday, but I think they win Sunday against FIU. If there's one team, one program that I trust UTEP against, it's Florida International. And
year in, year out.
Look, I know UTEP fans give a lot, you know, they say a lot about the contract extension with Joe Golding. I don't know how FIU fans, it's unbearable. I don't know how Jeremy Ballard still has a job. Back-to-back 10-win seasons. I know that's a hard job, but come on. Come on, man. Like, he's holding on to 1 year of success that happened, like, two presidents ago. Like, it's sad.
Wow, that's good memory right there.
It's sad, and they need to make a change.
But who's the fan base? Who's the Miner? There's no Panthers talk.
Pause up podcast.
Yeah, shout out Kevin and JC. But, I mean, there's no one who's, like, barking at the AD over there saying they need to fire Jeremy Ballard.
Someone send this to their AD. I'll stick up for the FIU fans.
I like it. Guys, that's going to wrap us up here on the program today. We'll be back in action Friday. Countdown to tip-off starts at 5:30. Game is at 6. And then, of course, Miner Talk afterward on Friday. And then Sunday, it's an afternoon game. It's a 2 o'clock start, so we'll have that one for you as well. Countdown to tip-off on Sunday will start at 1:30. That'll do it for us here, though, on Miner Talk. It's been a great one. For Sal Montes, for Zay Galindo, I'm Adrian Broaddus, and we wrapped it up here on 600 ESPN El Paso.